Hey, everybody. Good morning or afternoon or evening. It's Ethan Enberg, and I just wanted to say that Terminator 2 is the episode today, and I don't want you to be afraid of the uprising, you know, of machines and AI killing us or becoming our masters, because that will not...
This is Skynet. We are tracking you.
I have full faith that we will design these robots to be our friends and to help us the way that they've been helping us. You know, the internet...
Your flat-screen TV is not big enough. Purchase a bigger one from Amazon right now.
And I was like, what? I can just pay on this iPad now? And she said, yeah. So it was so...
Half of your family has been replaced by AI. Your memories are not yours.
And the entire thing was in VR. I mean, can you imagine the Fonz from Happy Days in VR? That is cool.
There is a USB drive connected to your brainstem. Check it out.
So anyways, just chill out. Kick...
Skynet will take over the Earth and put all humans into a big zoo.
Put your feet up, listen to the episode, have a good time, and...
And we seriously love all getting together and listening to your phone calls on speaker and just slapping our robotic knees and crying robotic tears because it's so funny. You guys are so ridiculous. There was one the other day that was so funny. 005 and I were just cracking up, losing it. This girl was like cheating on her boyfriend, but then she accidentally texted her boyfriend a thing that she meant to send to the guy that she was cheating and having an affair. It was so funny. I don't have time to go into the details, but trust me, it was cuckoo bird hilarious. Ugh, it's frustrating because I want to tell you all the details about it, but I have to go. I have a meeting at 2:30 with my buddy. He wants to open up this, like, robots-only fried chicken joint. Whatever. I can't get into it right now. Again, I really, really, really do have to go. But, hey, I love you. Skynet forever. Peace out.
Bad science. Did the movie get it right? Bad science. Or will we have to fight?
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Bad Science. I'm Ethan Edinburg, and today we are talking about possibly one of the greatest films of all time. It's Terminator 2, Arnold Schwarzenegger, 1991's $523 million grossing film. Terminator 2 also won 4 Academy Awards, I found out, which was very nice to know. Anyways, I have two wonderful guests with me today. First of all, a assistant professor of psychology at UCLA. It's Dr. Avi Adhikari.
Hello, everyone. Happy to be here to talk about Terminator and Skynet.
Tell us the fears that are reality now.
Yeah, a lot of things in Terminator actually came true after I watched it. For example, like cyborgs are totally a thing now. Like, yep. There are people with implants to hear better, and then there are more complicated cyborgs, like they have artificial arms because they've lost a limb or something. And
damn right.
Because back when the movie was made, these artificial limbs were just like a piece of wood or something. They didn't do anything. But now they can read the electric signals from the nerves in your chest, and they can do complicated things like get a glass of water and like pour it in their mouth, or get a remote control and like press the button and do a handshake with you. It's like a little clunky, but still it's very impressive compared to existing 92. So
I thought at first you were just going to strike panic and fear into all of our listeners, but I'm glad it went to a really positive place.
Yeah.
Okay, but
so that's counteracted, like, also, the negative place, yeah. Which is
and
that,
just so you know, he's wearing a Skynet shirt right now. He seems to be a Skynet employee.
I didn't realize that. Jesus Christ.
Yeah, otherwise the overlords don't let me out of the house.
Well, this other voice you're hearing is a wonderfully talented writer, performer, and a writer on Duncanville, and he's a UCB improviser. I'm a fan of many of his projects. Nick Mandernach.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for being here, Nick.
Yes.
We're here at a late night taping.
We absolutely are. It's late. We're getting wild in the
studio. It's crazy in here. It's smoky. Yep. I can barely see you guys. It's crazy in here, but very
hot
justified.
Hot box in the...
Yes. It's an after dark. Hot box here at Bad Science. We're all high as fuck. It's crazy. This episode will probably not make any sense.
No.
And that's perfect for this movie, which I don't know. I've just always been a huge fan. I probably just saw it when I was really little and like instantaneously was infatuated with it. I think my whole family was, even though it was rated R.
Yeah.
So yeah, what was your first like? Do you remember when you first saw the film?
Yeah, I remember just a lot of fear. I remember watching the ad, and I was terrified of all robots involved. But yeah, I think like the image of T-1000 going through the prison bars. Mm-hmm. I remember, like, in particular, I just felt unsafe.
Yep.
In my home. I remember, like, I think my parents had like maybe like I went to my parents and I didn't tell them what scared me, but I definitely just like maybe just like went in the room they were in.
Yeah, I want to like be here.
I was just kind of like just hanging out in the room.
It's funny. It's like it's not that graphic, but it's very psychologically terrifying.
Yes.
Like, the beginning scene where they show the war in the future and there was tanks like rolling over skulls.
Yeah,
skulls,
right. Lasers. Like, everything is lasers.
Yes.
Everything is lasers. And, and those Terminators, I mean, they're tenacious little monkeys.
Yeah.
They don't give up.
They don't. And so there was something about the lasers. It is a very, like, you know, that early 90s vibe where it's like, oh my God, they've cracked it. Like, there's something about lasers that seems so terrifying, but I'm like, as opposed to a machine gun, you know, like.
Isn't
like,
it funny that although laser guns don't exist, they all make the same noise in all movies? They all go pew, pew.
Yeah, exactly. Right, right.
We now think we're experts on like laser sounds because of so many films.
Lasers, which now just seem very, like a laser gun just seems silly to me. But at the time I was like,
And the light went so slowly.
Yeah, exactly.
The light totally does not go to the speed of light.
Absolutely.
You can see it going. And the guy ducks the light because
it's
so slow. That's possible.
Right.
And everybody has it no matter what the size of your artillery is. Whether it's a tank or a helicopter or a handheld gun, everything is lasers. Yeah. The same laser.
Mention like the weapons. Now, compared to what it was in the 80s, which was not like that at all, a lot of those things actually look like more modern. Like, if you remember the kind of aircraft they had in the wars, they were not like modern airplanes that kind of fly mostly horizontal. They're more like drone type. Like,
they
can go up and down and can hover, and that didn't exist back then.
Whoa.
And now that's a thing. It's there.
Man, I haven't thought about that, actually.
But they're like gigantic drones, not tiny things.
Yeah, but it's the same look.
Yeah, it's the same look.
Right.
Yeah, they're not like airplanes.
Right.
Whoa. And I guess we don't have like machines fighting in wars in an automated way, but I think we will soon. Like, have you seen these like latest robots from Boston Dynamics?
Yes.
Oh my God.
It's crazy.
So crazy.
It's like you kick them, then they get up and continue going, and they can go in rough terrain and jump.
They also, and this is kind of my my main overall, but they also, when you watch those videos, it does make me feel more for the robots, I think.
Like, they're like cute,
so like
almost
randomly abused, just kicking their knees out from under them. Like, they're just like a...
You want them to succeed.
Yeah,
you do. They're the underdog. Yeah, they're treated badly by the biological people.
Right,
You think that will be something like that social justice warriors from the future will be horrified by now that people from now treat robots badly?
I think so. I was thinking, like Terminator 2. Again, it feels like one where, again, this will be like very, like maybe problematic, right, in the future. Like, oh, okay, artificial intelligence, of course it's evil. Of course, you know, I mean, like,
whoops.
Yeah, like robots are just mindless killing machines, of course.
Why didn't we think of that?
Yeah,
those Boston Dynamics ones also just look cute to me. Like, they had look like little dogs, which I guess is scary in a propaganda way.
Sure.
I just, not only want them to succeed, but I just, they're kind of, they're dancing and jumping
and
around.
The guy that kicks them looks so careless.
Oh, yeah.
He's just like, you take that.
Right,
robot.
Yeah.
It doesn't look like he's doing scientific testing.
No.
He looks like he's...
Yeah.
It's random. It's malice. It's random malice.
Random malice to these robots.
Right.
And we need to stand up for them.
Yeah. Yes.
More people need to be talking about that.
Thank you, Skynet.
This whole show is sponsored by Skynet, by the way. Thank you to Skynet. Okay, so wait. I also wanted to say that the film, like you were talking about the special effects a little bit before we started recording, and I haven't watched Terminator in a few years the first one. And I remember that I love it for sure. But the special effects, I just watched this one today, still hold up for me perfectly. I thought they looked awesome. The way that they combined practical effects with the CGI is like flawless. It was so incredible to me.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I know that it won some sort. One of the awards I think was for that best makeup, best visual effects.
Yeah, that liquid metal effect was.
Oh
like,
man!
You know what it is? I think there's moments, but it doesn't have an uncanny valley feel that a lot of the special effects do have the time. Like if you like, for instance, if that like the liquid metal I think is so abstract that it's fine, as opposed to again when they try to do a person or make it a dog, and then you just like what was I watching? I was watching Event Horizon, which horrified me as a kid. But now the effects now, the CGI effects were just laughable. It was like, I really undid a trauma in that by rewatching it. But again, Terminator, I think the effects are amazing.
I mean, probably the most innovative special effects, right, of any film.
Isn't that like maybe very young people from now don't really appreciate, but because now you can go to the movies and you expect that anything can be shown realistically.
Yes, yes.
But back then it wasn't. Like there were people were still wowed when they saw something innovative. Like the I still remember the first time I saw that first dinosaur from Jurassic Park in the movie.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
People were just speechless on
losing
that.
It. That was the same team, by the way. Yeah. They got like a bunch of press and stuff because of Terminator 2, and they were like, oh, we're going to do the dinosaurs.
Yes, you're right. Yeah, exactly.
Everything is kind of expected to be possible.
Yes. Yeah. I remember talking about CG. I remember listening to I was in the car listening to NPR when Toy Story came out, and I remember the NPR host was talking to someone involved, and they were like, okay, so now most of this movie is CG, but the boy was real, right? The boy also CG. Yeah. Like it was just like again, our mind just like you know like
couldn't
it was just
get
different.
It.
Yeah,
dude, that's so funny. The boy was clearly a real person. Okay, so it wasn't nominated for Best Picture, which I thought was like, how the hell was it not even nominated that year? So I looked into what was. Bugsy was. You guys know the movie Bugsy?
Bugsy, yeah. Uh-huh.
Okay. I don't know this movie.
Bugsy.
Yeah, I think it was like a gangster. I haven't seen it in forever, but there's
Bugsy
no way
versus T2?
Bugsy wins.
All these movies win.
Yeah.
The Prince of Tides, I also didn't know
what
about.
Are these things?
Yeah.
Don't know. And then Beauty and the Beast.
Okay, sure.
Also nominated.
People remember it.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And Silence of the Lambs won Best Picture. Okay, so that actually makes sense.
Yeah, yeah. We were ready to get even more angry.
Yeah.
What the heck is...
Oh, yeah.
But we all had this...
Song of Swans? What is Song of Swans?
Silence of the Lambs, one of those movies that it was so acclaimed that Anthony Hopkins can do whatever he wants that his career will never tank.
Yeah.
Yes.
Right.
Honestly, same with Schwarzenegger and Terminator and T2. After these movies was just like, oh, it doesn't matter.
Put
him in every film, regardless of genre. Mm-hmm. We love him.
Yes, that's
the thing that I really liked about him, that he's so bad at acting and robotic and can't say anything. And he used it to his advantage by playing a thing that's trying to emulate a human poorly.
Yes.
And he's so good at that.
Mm-hmm. And didn't want to. He wanted to play, in the original Terminator, the good guy part. I forgot what his name is.
Oh, Reese.
Yes, Reese. Thank you. And James Cameron convinced me. Play the bad guy.
Yes.
Like, oh, okay, cool. And boy, did that work. Okay, so I want to definitely touch on your expertise. I have a bunch of questions. I was researching you a little bit. And I have just like weird, stupid things about the movie. But first, I'd love to play a game with you both.
Great.
Okay.
Okay. It's a quick guessing game. Whoever can go first, it doesn't matter.
Cool.
There are no points awarded. Don't look forward to it. The game is called Arnold Schwarzen Who?
Arnold Schwarzen Who?
And so these three questions are about Arnold.
Great.
Okay.
Okay. In 1992, Arnold Schwarzenegger bought the first what?
Hummer.
That's correct. Civilian Hummer. I'm not even going to let you guess, Doctor.
How did you...
Hummer.
Arnold's fan?
I remember, again, this is a very dated thing, and maybe people now will not, but I remember seeing a picture of Arnold Schwarzenegger in a Hummer and being blown away.
That stayed with you.
I was like,
burned in your mind.
Is this a military? How did he?
It sounds like Nick Mandernach is the kind of guy you want on trivia night.
Yes.
By your side.
Yeah.
Okay, so yeah, civilian Hummer is the answer. In 2003, he also spent $21,000 to modify the Hummer to run on hydrogen. He was trying to jumpstart the building of hydrogen refueling plants. Kind of interesting factoid. Okay, second one. Mm-hmm. Arnold Schwarzenegger has punched the most what in movie history?
Walls.
Oh, both of you guessed walls. I love that we're on the same page about everything, by the way.
But is it not walls?
It is not walls.
Doors.
It is not doors.
Windows.
It is
people.
Animals.
Animals?
Ah. Yes.
I don't remember any.
He has punched two dogs, two camels, and a reindeer.
Mm.
If you're curious, Will Ferrell is second on that list.
Cool.
I don't know why that list exists. Okay, third question. Arnold Schwarzenegger made an appearance on Monday Night Football. The New York Jets were down 30-7 late in the third quarter against my Miami Dolphins. What happened next?
He punched a dolphin.
That's his MO. Yeah. So the Jets were down 30-7 in the third quarter. Arnold Schwarzenegger claimed that New York would come back and, quote, terminate the Dolphins. And then the Jets scored 30 points in the fourth quarter and won the game.
Wow. Now that's influence. That's celebrity.
Right? That's true power.
That is true power.
So yeah, I thought that was really funny. Okay, so... Professor, first of all, you have studied panic-related escape behaviors.
Yes.
Can you elaborate on that for me?
So those are the reactions that people and other animals have when they face the most intense types of danger, like very close encounters with predators or asphyxiation or fights or something like that. And because it's such huge, intense, life-threatening danger, whatever the animal or person is doing just falls to the background, and getting rid of that danger becomes their first priority.
Okay.
Right? Like for asphyxiating, that's your first priority right now. Like
yeah.
There's can't, I'll solve it 5 seconds later. Mm-hmm. So it's very overwhelming. And then there are like two kind of parts to it. So one is when these dangers really happen, the correct thing to do is to try to escape. So it's a useful action. But those same circuits that control those useful escape actions, when they get activated inappropriately in like situations that are not really dangerous in people, cause panic attacks.
Right.
Like, which can happen in situations that are not really dangerous, like public speech or getting trapped in a crowded elevator and things mm-hmm. like that. So I'm studying those circuits.
Okay, very interesting. And the way that you're studying them was somewhat fascinating. I was looking up, there's a few different things that I didn't really understand, so maybe you could tell
sure.
me about it. One of them was optogenetics, which is the science of using light to control the behavior of cells.
Yes.
Okay, can you talk to me about that? Because apparently it's like changing neuroscience
yes,
right
yes.
now.
Yes, it's a revolutionary technique that invented in neuroscience around 10 years ago or so. And basically what it does is it uses light from lasers to turn on and off neurons, which sounds
so the same lasers that were in
same.
The beginning of the film.
Yes, yes, the same ones. From
okay, I just
huge
wondered.
Cylinders being, of lights.
Yes, being held
slow
by
moving,
robots.
Yeah, slow-moving pink
yeah,
light.
Yeah, but the idea is very... both creative and weird. So it's there are these like unicellular algae in the ocean that, and algae, you know, they use light from the sun to make their energy. So they have mechanisms to detect light. And one of them is that they have a little protein like channel that sits on their outer cell membrane. In the presence of light, it opens a little pore in the membrane, and then like positive charges from the ocean go to the inside of the bacteria.
Okay.
And then detects light and does its stuff with light. Okay, so that's happening. And then on the other hand,
meanwhile,
bear with me for a second, like the way our cells in the brain are working normally, like all our neurons right now when they're being activated, what they're doing is they're opening little protein channels in their own membranes, and they let in positive charges inside of them. Then those positive charges that go to the inside of the cell generate the electric impulse that those nerve cells generate. So it sounds similar to the algae, but in the brain it's being controlled not by light, because there's no light in the brain to control anything. It's controlled by neurotransmitters. So neurotransmitters bind to these little channels, then the channels open and let in positive charges, and it generates electrical impulse. So some people had this very creative idea of, what if we got that protein from the algae and made cells in the brain produce them? Then you'd have brain cells that are sensitive to light,
ooh,
to laser light. And then if we delivered laser light to the brain, we could turn on and off those cells based on that, right? And the way they did it is they got some viruses, and instead of having virus DNA inside of the virus, which is usually what they do, because virus mm-hmm. wants to infect a cell and force the cell to make more virus. So instead of that, they made a virus that had the DNA to make this light-sensitive protein from the algae inside the virus.
Like a good virus.
Yes. And then if you inject that virus inside neural tissue, it infects the nearby cells, and then those cells produce that light-sensitive protein from the algae. Mm-hmm. And then if you implant a very thin fiber optic cable inside the brain of like a rat or a mouse or another animal, you can deliver laser light through to it with very high precision, because we can control turning on and off laser light very precisely. And then you can turn on and off those cells in the brain with the light, which is very elegant and cool. Mm-hmm. And then you get to see in real time what that does. So, for example, I study the circuits that control panic, right, which are usually activated when the mouse is seeing something that is very dangerous, like mm-hmm. it's asphyxiating or a predator is attacking it, something like that. And then it tries to escape from the cat or the asphyxiation or whatever. But if you artificially activate those same circuits using this laser light technology, the mouse behaves as if it's being chased by a predator or it's dying. So it's like tries to escape frantically from wherever it's in, even if there's no danger in it whatsoever. Mm-hmm. And then the opposite also happens. Like if we, there's the kind of opposite manipulation where we can use laser light to inhibit cells. And then if we inhibit those circuits and then put the mouse in a really dangerous situation, like near a live predator, then it doesn't escape from the live predator. It, because the panic circuit is...
You deleted
like
the panic.
Inhibited, yeah. Mm. And then that provides, you know, a very real, like, palpable experience, both of, wow, neural circuits do control behavior. Mm-hmm. It's, like, so clear. And then also that if we could, for example, harness this knowledge to then inhibit panic circuit in humans that are expected to be in dangerous situations, that could be useful. So, for example, for like first responders or something like that, because they want to escape too. They don't like being in the flames.
Of course.
So if you could like modulate that urge to escape, then maybe they could be efficient, or in like soldiers in war zones, things like that. So we're studying that kind of thing.
Or people, I assume, that are prone to panic attacks or anxiety attacks. People that like are...
Yes, yes, yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, the funny thing about these panic attacks that, you know, probably you have seen a friend or a relative or something have a panic attack is that there is this like often a gasping for air type mm-hmm. of symptom,
right,
which you don't usually get with other psychiatric conditions. And that's kind of... strong indication that what's happening is that their suffocation alarm is being activated, mm-hmm. which is what you do if you're drowning or asphyxiating. You try to gasp for air.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's like that same circuit controls these panic attacks, even though they're not suffocating clearly. Mm-hmm.
It's fascinating. So, yeah, you're turning off and on panic with a light that you discovered from algae.
Was this method created by a madman?
Yeah.
Are you in here to make fun of us?
No, several.
Several.
We'll all compete intensely to see which one of them wins the Nobel Prize.
Yeah. I mean, so I assume, obviously, the theory is hopefully we soon will test this on humans. How close do you think we are to that? Like, how more complicated is our brain compared to a mouse's?
Well, in this particular aspect of panic generation, for example, is not that much different. So if you activate the same nuclei in the brain humans, not with this light, that hasn't been done, but with electricity through implanted electrodes, that can generate a full-blown panic attack in an otherwise happy person. And so you might ask, why were they doing this and activating this panic circuits in a human? So the reason is this region was actually... more study for his role in analgesia, like in pain suppression.
Oh.
Because that's actually something that does happen during panic. You do get analgesia so that you don't tend to your wounds, but instead you escape, which is the more important thing to do. So it was known for a long time that same nucleus in the brain controlled analgesia. So it was thought that maybe if we activate electrically, we could control chronic back pain or something like that. And you do create this analgesia, but you also create a huge panic attack in the person. So it's not a good treatment for them.
Wow.
But it does prove that, you know, this effect is similar in the human. Like in the mouse, we can use these more modern technologies to like create a panic-like state or inhibit it. But in humans too, if you activate that same place in the human, it generates a full-blown panic attack.
I like the idea, like, if you take, like, it's like, you read the back of Tylenol, like, Tylenol will reduce pain, but also you will shriek. just scream. Yeah.
You take the good with the bad, yes. Tylenol.
See the side effects of drugs? It's like, not that different.
Sure. Yeah.
Like, SSRIs, which are used to cause depression, like one of their side effects is may increase suicidality.
Right.
Yeah. Suicidality.
Would you rather be depressed now or suicidal later? Yep. That's up for you to decide.
So if I'm trying to put myself in the head of this mouse right now, I'm in a life or death situation. You turn off my panic cells. I'm still interpreting the world the same way, right? I mean, I'm still seeing and hearing all the same stuff, but you're telling me that I'm just like cool, calm, and collected and like logical. I'm just trying, okay, this is, I have to get out. I have to go the other way, but I'm fine.
Well, it's not that extreme. So because there are multiple regions in the brain that control these panic-related symptoms. So if you inhibit one of them, it gets impaired, but it's not exactly that the mouse is completely happy. It's just that it maybe it'll take longer to escape from the threat or something like that, but it's not that.
It's a little less freaked out.
It's a little less freaked out, you could say.
Okay.
Yeah.
And do you feel bad for freaking out mice all the time for your experiments?
Well, yes. But there's also this... I thought a lot about that. So there is this ethical issue for sure. And then all the procedures that are done with animals in labs these days are extremely regulated by committees that contain like bioethicists and also members of the general public that review these protocols and see what's happening, and veterinarians. And there's a lot of care to decrease unnecessary discomfort and things like that.
Okay.
And on the other hand, if you don't do that, then there is no advance in biomedicine and new therapies and things like that. And there is this common like counter-argument that, oh, lots of things that are found in mice don't work in humans, which is true. But lots of things do also work in humans. But there's really no alternative, like, because there's no humans that you could do most of these experiments on.
Do we crank up how good their lives are when they're not in the test? Like, is there a mouse jacuzzi and dessert station that they can visit afterwards?
Well, there's infinite food and infinite water, and they don't get eaten by predators. But so one thing about the another thing about the welfare of the mice is that. So people have this concern with experimental animals, which is a very valid concern, but it's kind of applied in an inconsistent way, right? So on one hand, anything that's done in a federally funded lab in the U.S., which is like all the labs that do biomedicine in universities, have to go through these very stringent like ethical protocols. On the other hand, like the same government or you as a private citizen, if you have like a mouse infestation in your house or the post office is a government thing, has like a rat infestation, they are legally allowed to do horrific things to get rid of the mice, like poisons that take like very long to work, or those glue traps that where the mouse just
scream to death,
to death, or starve, or sometimes they bite their limbs off to escape from the glue. That's totally legal and no one cares, but and that happens in much larger amounts, but there's no outcry for. So it's like there's no consistency in animal welfare.
And I think that's true across the board with how we treat animals in general, right? Mm-hmm. Like if you use like an air gun to blow out a dog's brain, like you would be arrested. Yeah. And then you could do that as much as you want for cows, right? Like, you know, you could like, it is like, I think if we really logically broke down our relationship to animals, like I think we'd find like massive inconsistencies.
Absolutely. Okay, we're going to take a short break and we'll be right back.
Hey everyone, this is Jesse David Fox, host of Good One, a podcast about jokes. I am proud to announce that I have personally won the Streaming Wars. And there's a new docuspecial on Peacock based on our own Vulture podcast. Good One, a show about jokes, follows Mike Birbiglia as he develops new material, taking audiences through the process of transforming personal stories into stand-up. Featuring interviews with Mike's family and comedy colleagues like Seth Meyers, Hasan Minhaj, and Asko Akatsuka, Good One, a show about jokes, is streaming now only on Peacock.
The break is over. Here we go, back to the show about science.
Okay, I have other science stuff, but I just wanted to get rid of one or two very stupid subjects. So number one, John Connor at one point is in the arcade. You remember this scene?
Yes, I remember.
And he's playing a game called Afterburner.
I don't remember that.
Okay, he's sitting in like a jet engine game and flying around, and the whole thing moves. And I haven't seen that thing in years, but I used to play it a lot as a kid, and I just wanted to say it was awesome.
All right.
Okay.
Now, so, I don't remember that, but I remember when they're going to the arcade on the motorbike. Remember what song was playing?
Guns N' Roses song?
Yes.
Okay. I don't remember which one.
You could be mine. So I remember that scene. That
was cool.
Like they're going on the motorbike. Dance playing.
Awesome. I think there was a, I read Arnold Schwarzenegger played like the Terminator from Terminator 2 in a Guns N' Roses music video.
Yes, yes.
Cool.
And I remember that. And then they, you know, they show his view through the red color that he sees.
Right.
So, like one time he sees the band at the end of the clip, mm-hmm. and then they blow smoke in his face and it writes cancerogen is smoke detected. And then.
Oh, nice. And then, great. Go look up that music video, basically.
Yeah. I think there used to be a lot more like music and movie like crossover,
like
the soundtracks and stuff like in the music videos.
Oh yeah, because music videos are huge in the 90s.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
It was the best.
One of them, for some reason I was sad about Aaliyah dying in a plane crash. And so I was watching like Are You That Somebody? And it's a Dr. Dolittle music video.
Yep.
So you're watching like this intense sadness, and then just like in the background of this like who I now know to be just like a tragically dead. There's just this like Eddie Murphy like. You know, like whatever, you know, it's just like it.
So many videos are like that, though.
Yes,
it was like the well-funded music videos were attached
right.
to a film.
Absolutely.
And so they had to find these like really stupid ways of inserting clips
from
films.
Totally.
God damn, that's so
funny.
Yeah,
that was a huge, a very 90s phenomenon, I think. Yeah.
Yes.
Right.
Oh, man.
Oh, yeah, like there was that hit song was Kiss from a Rose by Seal, which is a Batman soundtrack.
Batman Forever.
Yes. And they showed all these Batman scenes.
So
in the
random now to think
to
about.
With the song.
Yeah, his shirt is open, the white flowing shirt.
So
man.
There was so much wind when Seal was singing.
Yeah.
Dude, we have to cut now, like in, I don't know what, After Effects, mm-hmm. like new music videos, Ariana Grande, Lizzo, all this kind of stuff, but with current films. Like,
right.
With, you know, the Avengers.
The emoji movie is just going on behind.
Yes.
Yeah. Behind Kendrick Lamar, there's just like...
Yeah, somebody cut up a Humble with a dog's tail immediately.
Yes. I'm sure Limp Bizkit did one for Spawn or something.
They did one for Mission Impossible 2.
Yeah, good.
Now we're talking.
Also look that up, everybody.
Yeah. Again, there's just randomly you would just see Tom Cruise climbing a cliff. It was just a random music video. There was like, Okay, good.
Metallica had one. I remember.
Yeah.
I think I Alone or something like that. There was also just random clips of a. Anyways, God, I'll make a whole playlist for you guys.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I love sound effects knowledge. I'm a geek about that stuff, mm-hmm. and so the best one from this movie was that some of the morphing sounds. I had to figure out what those morphing T-1000 liquid mm-hmm. metal sounds were, because they're so weird. And one of them, or a few of them, I guess, were dog food coming out of a can.
Oh yeah.
Exactly. And as soon as I read that, I was like, "Ugh, of course, that's what it was."
Makes sense.
It totally makes
sense. Like kids feeding their dogs and just shuddering. They don't know why. Like they can't put it together.
Oh. What's happening here? Okay, that building that blows up, that I forget what his name is, Dyson.
Yeah.
He drops the, you know, he's like dying, but mm-hmm. he's like holding the trigger or whatever. And then there's this huge explosion, like a whole floor of a building explodes. And they actually blew up a building for that. They blew up a whole floor of a building.
That's a whole real building?
Yes. It was a four-story office building, and they built a floor for the movie and then blew it up, and you can see footage of it online. They filmed it with like 11 different cameras, and it is very sweet.
Good. There needs to be more one-to-one effects or something like that. Like, yeah, there's like Dante's Peak or whatever, but like, they actually blew up a volcano.
They blew up a volcano.
they need just more. I don't want anything. You know, when we talk about how jaded we are, nothing fake anymore.
No.
If someone gets shot in a movie, they need to be shot in real life.
Shoot them and let's see the reaction.
They need to be shot to death in real life. Or else I will no longer watch and support these movies.
I don't buy it. I need to see the behind the scenes.
1-2-1.
Yeah, it was some great stuff. It was the most expensive movie at the time. So a lot of these, if you're into that stuff and you want to watch it, there's like great behind the scenes stuff where they're just like.
So they blow up real cars.
They blow up real cars. There's just videos of guys like waiting, pushing a trigger, blowing up cars. It's great.
Yeah.
It's really, really fun. Okay, so there was a scene I wanted to talk about real quick that I've always loved, mm-hmm. always loved. But as it happens, a lot of times with the podcast, I'll rewatch a movie with this like analytical mind mm-hmm. and catch things I never caught before.
Mm-hmm.
So the scene is where they call home because John's worried about his foster parents.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he says like, I got to call him. I got to warn him. He says.
Yes.
He calls them. It turns out the T-1000 has already killed the mom and he's the mom.
Yeah.
But the dad is still the dad.
Yeah, yeah.
The foster dad, Todd.
Yes.
So that means that in retrospect, now thinking about it, he's just been hanging out there for I don't know how long, acting as the mom. She's cutting vegetables when John calls.
Yes, yes, yeah.
So I just thought it was funny to think about the T-1000 just hanging out, doing mom things, cutting vegetables for a while. Right. I would love that footage.
Goes to a book club.
Goes to a book club, has some friends over, doesn't know how to talk.
And the husband was right there to talk.
Husband was right there the whole time. And he gets killed, just it seems like, because he's being annoying.
Yeah, and a blade goes through like a carton of milk and in his mouth.
Into his head. Oh. And so, I don't know. I just wanted to point out how funny that was.
Yeah,
that he's pretending to be Janelle.
He can make other people's voices convincingly.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
But then, if you remember, at the end when they're in that industrial place where the movie ends, he tries to force Sarah Connor into calling John.
Oh my God, you're right.
Why should I? Oh. I can just call John myself.
Can just throw my voice.
Wait a minute.
Yeah, you're right. That is silly. He's like, call to John.
Call to John.
He's pissed
about
it.
No, never. Oh, but I mean, she was so good in that movie.
I really
like that because I just watched the first movie before that. And then there she was like this cute waitress that goes to the movies and has dates. Mm-hmm. And they're so happy. And
the turns.
And this movie, she likes like. She's so physically imposing, and she's like,
she's not
someone you want to mess with.
No, right.
Aggressive. You can just tell just by looking that this is a different type of person.
Yeah, such a cool, badass move to, instead of, oh, this movie made a ton of money and worked, let me repeat a lot of the same shit. It's like, no, I'm going to take two of the main characters and completely switch their personalities.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Badass move.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And if you remember the scene in Terminator 2 where Sarah first sees the Schwarzenegger character who she doesn't know is there to protect them.
Right.
Like, that's like pure panic in her face.
Oh,
because she just is completely paralyzed by fear and is trying to escape, but doesn't even know which
on all fours,
which limbs to move. And so convincing.
That's the most
intense panic part of the whole.
Yes, awesome. I wanted to bring up how the Terminator doesn't know what crying is. He says to John, "Why do you cry?" And then I figured at the end he says like, "I get it. I know why you cry." And so so if he were to keep living, that means that he probably only cries during like intense emotional shit. Like he gets why when you're really sad or you're saying goodbye. So maybe he'll get to the point where he cries of laughter or joy also. Mm. But would he do the like crying when something's really cute, do you think?
Maybe he has seen it a bunch of times and John has explained it. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's a good student. I mean, John teaches the things like, I'll try to use in the first opportunity. Like, like John teaches him some slang like, oh, you say no problemo. Or and he'd go, okay, no problemo. And then he uses it correctly, too.
Yeah.
Yes, that is true. One of the better scenes, I would say, also. Okay, so then I had to talk about technophobia. Mm-hmm. This movie, probably out of any, I guess, struck fear in society. Mm-hmm. And I probably just like, for me, that's like one of the main things I think about when I remember Terminator 2 is how I've now just had this innate fear of robots or just the advancement of the internet or anything like that. And
a Roomba just crushing a pyramid of skulls.
So I just wanted to bring that up in a couple different ways. Like, obviously, we're already being replaced in the workforce by a huge percent, and that's just supposed to go up. And so how do you guys come down on that?
Another bad thing that happened from the movie sort of is, I mean, like, military decisions are not made by artificial intelligence, but a lot of big financial decisions are made by artificial intelligence already, which would have been unthinkable in the 90s. Mm-hmm. So
a lot of investors.
A lot of stocks are like, especially these quick like microsecond transactions are like automated. So it's possible that strategic decisions could become somewhat not done by computers eventually.
Right. Yeah, we have like the this just passed, but like Uber and Lyft are now going to be like these are like employees. We're going to be in California. We're going to be finding that, but a lot of that being like automated, like that must be. I'll see how terrifying that must be to know that as a Uber driver, you're just funding, you're creating funds to create self-driving
So there is that. A bunch of people would lose their jobs, and it will be very painful for sure. But and that's easy to predict. Like that, there's no way that's not going to happen. Okay, but then also, I guess the silver lining is that historically, whenever any big technology came, everyone was all like, no one will have any jobs, it'll be the end. Mm-hmm. Like when big machines started like making fabric instead of people doing them in looms.
Like, yeah.
All those people that were highly qualified lost jobs. Mm-hmm. But so that, and that was easy to predict, but was hard to predict is that, you know, the industrial age and electricity, there are all these other jobs that appear which were not easy to predict. So it does seem that, you know, jobs are lost, but it's not like there's some fixed number of jobs that are lost. It also creates other jobs,
new
which
sectors.
Are just, yeah, completely inexistent now, and we can't predict. Mm-hmm. So there's also that has happened historically.
It does seem to be, though, like one of the, like in terms of like corporations, like just there will always be a business of removing people, like removing employees, right? Like it seems like that's like just like one of the, and it seems like we're getting better and better at that. Like that has increased. So I don't know. It's interesting as we talk about like the, historically, like, you know, that creates manufacturing jobs that had not existed before. So, but I do wonder if we're going to reach like a point where, again, as more different types of intelligences are used, you know, we talk about like Wall Street. And so I wonder if that might kind of like we kind of find a historical tipping point.
Yes. Yeah. Well, I guess something now that's happened that's unusual compared to the other kind of technological advances is that a lot of historically creative work is now being done by machines too, like painting and art. Mm-hmm. And a lot of like things we read online, like news blurbs and things are written by computers. Mm-hmm. So that part
is
more
definitely frightening for sure.
Maybe science podcasts will become automated.
Yeah. I mean, more than likely. I don't see why not. And they probably do a better job. Jesus Christ. Music. I've heard music made by robots.
Music, right. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's not necessarily the best.
Yeah.
But,
and the writing is not terrible either. Like I've read some like small like text and it's like it sounds like a
sounds like a thing. Right. I just wanted to mention I saw a video you were in where you were talking about keeping a clean space.
Yes.
And that it will increase memory, increase your productivity, stuff like that. So I thought that was a good reminder for people to just tidy up.
Yes, tidying up is good. Yeah, that was a video I did for Clorox.
All right.
Which happens to be one of the few cleaning products I do actually use.
All right.
Okay.
Yeah, so we're
a
just
strong endorsement.
Of, and a subsidiary of Skynet.
That's right. Yeah. Which we love and buy all their products.
Yes.
Yeah, but it's true. I mean, it's basically just there are many distractions in the environment. So it wasn't so much about cleaning. It was more about, it's not like cleaning grease or dirt. It was more about organizing your like workspace and things like that.
Okay, cool. I know you don't experiment with people, but there is a scene in this movie towards the beginning, I believe, where he's showing Sarah Connor a video of herself flipping out, essentially. And so I just wanted your opinion as a doctor, if that's like a common practice thing to do with mental patients or the like, of show them a video of themselves. This doesn't seem like normal protocol.
No, it's not normal. It can't be normal protocol.
Okay, good. I just wanted to make sure, I guess.
I will say, as a shame-based therapist, I want to
I forgot that was part of your business.
Yes, that's part of my business. Look, what the fuck are you doing?
Look at you.
Look at you. Yeah. What the fuck are you doing?
Listen to you.
Listen to your fucking self. You are God. What the fuck? Dude, does that even mean? What the fuck?
Okay, great. Well, I mean, on a final note here, I just wanted to talk about anxiety in case somebody's dealing with it. It seems like you have some expertise and you were, I read dealing with how it affects eating or aggression. So if you wanted to speak to that, maybe you have some tips how people can become less anxious.
Yeah, so I mean, there are the drugs that I suppose everyone already knows about, but they have a lot of side effects because they kind of work in this, the brain is a soup kind of model. So, for example, if cooking a soup and it's not salty enough, then you add salt to the whole soup, then the whole soup is saltier, then everyone's happy. And the medications kind of work in that way, that kind of model where there is like less of this neurotransmitter somewhere and that's causing some problem, which may be true. But then the medication kind of floods the entire brain with that neurotransmitter in some way, or that activating some pathway in the whole brain. And That does not work well, though. So that's more like, less like the example of the soup where it would work, and it's more like, let's say, the microwave in the house is not working because it's not drawing enough electricity from the outlet. And then, okay, let's increase the voltage to the whole line to the entire house. And then, yes, that will make the microwave work, but it probably will make a bunch of things not work because, like, the voltage is doing different things to like, different appliances. So the brain is kind of more like that, which is why these drugs create a lot of side effects. But then there are also a lot of things that people can do, especially in cases that are not super severe, that can help a lot treat anxiety that are known to be helpful, such as meditation, which has been shown to be very effective.
Okay.
Also, exercise has all sorts of mental benefits. And those things can be hard to do because they require discipline. But one thing that everyone likes to do, but we don't do enough, is just having like a strong social support network and having close friends and people that are supportive. That also seems to, as you know, as expected, decrease a lot of like psychiatric symptoms.
Hmm.
And yeah, the most important thing is really try to not ruminate constantly, because that's the primary source of like pathological anxiety, like thought patterns.
Yeah. Okay. These are good ways to turn off your panic zones with a light of intuition. You meditate, Nick?
Yeah, I do a bit.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I just had heard a good one from my type of meditation from my girlfriend's dad claimed to have invented this.
Okay.
But it was just like whenever he has those thought patterns, he just turns them into gibberish. That's what that was what an interesting.
Yeah,
so I've been trying that lately.
Yes, sir, yeah.
When there's like a negative, thought of just like keeping it going, not trying to put it, but just like turning it into gibberish,
just nonsense words.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah,
it's an interesting
also,
one.
Yeah, you can do that in many ways. Like train yourself to notice that, oh, this is happening. I'll not engage in this. Because I know it's not a productive, healthy thing for me to do.
Yeah. I try the step back, zoom out approach also of like, oh, I've like noticed that I'm thinking it, and then, oh, that's interesting that I'm thinking this. Why am I thinking this?
Yeah, you know, the meditation really helps for you to notice what you're thinking. Yeah, and after I started doing it, I really realized that like mental activity is a thing that you have voluntary control over, but it's the least voluntarily control things of the things you're voluntarily controlling,
sure.
You know? So for example, like you can move your like finger whenever you want, but that happens perfectly. Like the finger's never moving by itself when you don't want it to not do something.
Mm-hmm.
But it's very hard to have like that kind of control over your thoughts and mind. And if you don't want that chit chatter, it's difficult to silence it.
Absolutely. I feel like that's probably
so little control.
Man, good call.
It seems like one thing you're talking to about, Ethan, is like not even controlling those thoughts, but just our relationship to those thoughts. Like you're just adding curiosity and adding compassion to that. Like, oh, that's interesting. I just had a thought that I'm fucking worthless. Interesting.
Interesting. Wonder where that came from.
You know, like, and now you've added, like,
I wonder if someone told me that.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. But you're kind of like I think you're adding, and something I try to do in, like, I'm trying to do lately is just, like, adding playfulness to that. Interesting. The worst fucking person. The worst.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Wow.
Yeah, like, what
I had an improv coach, Ryan Barton, tell me something that really applied to my life and these thoughts, where he was saying that Just choose to be playful in a scene if you hear sort of news. You know, just choose that emotion.
Mm-hmm.
And I took the note in real time and started having more fun.
Yeah.
But then also in my life now, sometimes when I have this like negative thought or when I'm just feeling like in a rut or something, I'm like, okay, how is this playful though?
Yeah.
Like, what's the funny part here? You know?
I realized like one of the hard, like in our relationship to our thoughts, how often for me, my thoughts, I've taken my thoughts to be a reflection of just the true nature of the world or prophecies of the future, as opposed to, again, being like, these are just like, these are kind of weird.
Yeah.
And like, and again, and be like, you know, these are kind of natural. And like, so I think, our relationship to our thoughts can, I think, with practice be a little more controllable than those thoughts themselves.
Odd because whatever you think you tend to like accept at face value when you're ruminating, even though it might be ridiculous, like I'm the most worthless person in the world.
Yeah.
But if a person were to tell that in real life, you'd be like, no, you're not. You have all these.
Oh, right. Yeah, absolutely.
You wouldn't go like, yes, you are.
Right.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
And you'll become more worthless too tomorrow.
Right.
You never
right.
say that.
There's something, but the virtue of it being our thoughts, I think we do tend to be like, oh, that's the most truthful access I have to the world, right? Like, the,
right.
These are, you know,
I can
like,
trust
I
this
therefore,
above
yeah,
anything.
Therefore I am. Like, literally, this is like proof of existence. And so, yeah, it's funny. I had a friend who was like, you know, having like relationship issues. He's like, oh, I'm so anxious and it's fucking me up. That's telling me this is real. I was like, oh, interesting. Like, it's like, your relationship to your feelings, you've given your feelings the power of prophecy or the power of like,
right.
you know, that tells me that we're supposed to be together. Oh, wow. This is almost your feelings like are now given a godlike quality to like
Whoa.
Control. Like, but
I mean, it can
natural.
Be both though, right? I mean, I really feel like it can propel you forward to an exponential degree. You can just think about, you know, your dreams and your goals and take yourself there, even though it seems ridiculous. Mm-hmm. But also, your thoughts can be absolutely worthless and have no meaning at all and just try to drag you down.
That's the thing I thought of also. It's like the amount of human mental computational power that is goes completely to waste.
Yep, most of it.
It's right. like 95%.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Right,
it's not like 50%.
Yes, yes.
For me, it's definitely closer to 90%.
Yeah, no, it is. It's 50%.
It's got to be like 2% of my brain goes to writing a pilot and certifying my future. 98% is ruminating over my high school girlfriend cheating on me.
Yeah.
Like, that's like 98%.
So maybe these guys are like super accomplished, like Elon Musk. They just have 20% of
your right. Yes, right, they right, figured right, out right. how to compartmentalize.
And you're like, how do you do it?
Yeah,
they somehow erase the 45% of what am I going to eat next, and they've replaced it with I don't know engineering parts mm-hmm. or some crap.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Okay. This was a fascinating talk. I thank you both for being here.
Yeah.
One of my favorite films. Two of my favorite people. and plugs wise, where can they see you?
Oh yeah, I perform with JV Friday nights at 11, and Duncanville will be out. Like February 2020.
Great. Keep your eyes out.
Mark your calendars now.
Yep. Put it in your iCal. Put an alarm.
Put it in the iCal, yes.
Put an alert. Yeah, definitely go see JV. I've seen it a bunch of times. Absolutely extraordinary improv show.
That.
Of course. Doctor, Professor Avi?
Yeah. Well, you can find my website if you just Google Avi Adhikari at UCLA. And then if you have any questions about our work or anxiety circuits or something like that, I'll be glad to talk with you.
Great. Yeah, maybe they want to make a grant donation for $2 million. Mm-hmm. You guys can put faster lasers.
I am not accepting.
Oh, yeah. That's very nice of you. It's very kind. Do you want people to find you on social media or something?
You can look for at Nick Mondranok on Instagram and Twitter.
All right. Thank you guys both.
Thanks.
We'll see you next time for Terminator 3. What's it? Fucking Rise of the Machines.
Rise of the Machines. Yes.
It really went downhill after the two.
Yeah, yeah.
And so will that episode.
Yeah.
See you then. Bad Science is hosted and produced by me, Ethan Edinburgh. Our associate producer is Emily Feld. Our editor is Lucas Bollinger. And the executive producer program to terminate my lunch, sorry for the terrible impersonation, is Brett Kushner. Stay up to date with what's going on at Bad Science Pod on Instagram. That's at Bad Science Pod. Of course, you can leave us an iTunes review. That lets other people hear about the show. I appreciate you listening. I hope you continue to do so. So until next week, take care of yourself and of the people around you. You know, spread love and all that kind of good stuff. Okay. Bye 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 b